Hey there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Episode 205, Marissa Pecos. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today, I am just thrilled to introduce my featured guest, Marissa Pecos. So welcome to the show, Marissa.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on today.
Well, we're excited to hear from you. So it's an early Sunday morning here. It's August 13th that we're recording. So well, go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so Jersey girl, born and raised, relocated after graduating high school down to South Carolina, went to the University of South Carolina, have a background in education, and kind of was a whirlwind during that time. I lived overseas, taught English in Japan, taught English in Italy, and then came back after about a little over a year and decided to move up to Rhode Island and live with my sister, and was there for a while and then decided can't take the cold. So I came back south and started in Savannah, Georgia, and I worked in the hospitality industry. I completely abandoned any want for working in education and just was trying to find myself and figure out who I am and what makes me, you know, tick. And so lived in Savannah, loved it, loved the culture, loved the people, loved the scenery, loved everything about it, and kind of decided that's where I was going to stay. So then fast forward few years and met my current husband. And he and I got together. We had a baby and said, okay, now what do we want to do? I was always a vegetarian and, wanted to, you know, always because of animal rights. I'm not like a crazy, you know, super passionate activist. It's not something I talk about a lot, but it was just a personal thing that I did for myself. But when I got pregnant, I had a lot of issues. And so the doctors really were needing me to eat more protein and, you know, really needed to eat chicken and fish. And so I kind of abandoned the vegetarianism and then started, unfortunately, to like eating meat again. And so I said to my husband, if I'm going to do this, like, I want to do it the right way. So we started looking for land and, we found a couple of acres outside of Savannah, that was completely raw. And we said, all right, let's do it. So I'm very pregnant and we were getting our land ready, had the baby and just have slowly started now. She's just over two. And so we've been for the last, you know, 2+ years kind of getting this land to a point where we've now, you know, we now have our farm, which is Whippoorwill Farms SC. And I do a lot of different vegetables. We have chickens, meat, rabbits, pigs. I have a horse that is just for like our own pleasure. And lots of veggies. And so that's kind of my story and how I ended up here. So I've continued to eat meat, but we do it really with what we harvest for ourselves.
And are you a millennial? Another one of those rock star millennials I'm always talking about?
So I'm 29.
Oh yeah, for sure. I just love your farm. Now, I found you on Instagram, right? Is how I found you.
I think so. Well, I think I had commented on another podcast's Facebook page, and then I think you checked out my farm page on Facebook. But I do have a, I'm really active with social media. Aside from what I do on my farm, I work a regular full-time job. I'm actually a digital account executive for Savannah Morning News. And I do all of the marketing and advertising in there for their digital platform.
Oh my gosh, how do you
So
do all that and do the farm and take care of your daughter?
I'm not sure. It just happens. You
See,
wake up
and
really
people try to
early and
tell
go
me
to bed
millennials
really
are
late.
lazy, and I just totally disagree. Aw. I do usually start out the show asking about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, you said you grew up in New Jersey, so did you have a garden there?
Yeah, so I don't know how many of your listeners are from Jersey or have been to Jersey, but if you've not and are not familiar with New Jersey, it's always like a very common misconception that New Jersey is all industrial. However, it is the Garden State for a reason, because we have a beautiful summer that's not super humid, but it does get really cold in the winters. But during the summertime, you can have wonderful gardens. And we have Jersey tomatoes and Jersey corn, very famous in our state. But my dad was a AP bio teacher, and from the minute that I can remember, it was always outside with him. I was always outside. And we were learning about plants, we were learning about creatures, everything that we possibly could learn about. My dad was always teaching us. And so he and I, particularly, just I have a sister, but she never really was into the gardening. He and I would always do a garden every summer. And we would go and rent a rototiller, and we would pick out our plants, and he and I would do the garden and weed and water. And I have pictures of myself. He would make a nice mud puddle for me, and I could roll around like a hog. And I have pictures of me and like as a little kid covered in mud. And just it was great. And then we would go out to the garden and pick our veggies, and we would do like zucchini and eggplant, tomatoes and lettuces and beans and corn. And it was just that was always what I remember, but it was so special to me, and such a big part of my life. And I had horses growing up, and so I was always around animals. I was always outside, and so it was just natural. But it's the first time that I had met my husband, was when he was actually my neighbor, and he was gardening, and I walked up to him, and I was like, "Wow, you have quite a green thumb." And this is what he remembers, like when he first met me, and that he loved me so much from that moment because I told him what a green thumb he had. He thought that was so great. So
Aww.
he and I have always had that in common. And then, just having my dad be such a influencer in my love for growing your own food, seeing where your food comes from. I mean, we never did anything with meat growing up, but the veggies have always been, a super important part of what my summers were like in New Jersey.
So I originally grew up in New York, even though I live in Montana now. And we like
Perfect.
New Jersey. I even lived in New Jersey for a while when I first got out of high school. And but I lived kind of closer to the city, whereas Although, like, when you get west, but I always remember my parents, like, I had cousins that lived somewhere, and there was this place called Sparta Glen that we went to, and it was just, like, I can still remember, like, I was probably 6 years old or 8 years old, like, playing at this creek with my brother, and we, like, it had been such a long drive out of the, from Long Island, and it was just so gorgeous. Like, my family still talks about that trip, and just New Jersey does have many beautiful places. So,
it does. And I always say, like, I love, if New Jersey didn't have the winters that it did, I would never have left. I mean, the people are great. I have, you know, I still have problems in the South where, you know, especially in my field where I'm always working with the public and I'm always working with local businesses, and it's very clear that, you know, you're not from here, even though I've been in the South for 10 plus years. You know, it's hard to break the the idea of being from the North, especially when you're in the South, and then people have such ideas about what Northerners are like. So it's interesting. It's certainly interesting.
New Jersey
is beautiful.
For sure, because we're in Montana. Like, my husband's been here since the 60s, and they still don't consider him a local, or, like, you know, his family is, you know, you have to be, like, one of these really old families that have been here forever in our town, and just there's a lot of that. And I will always be considered a New Yorker. Like, it's funny, when I go to teach, the kids are always like, why do you talk so fast? And stuff, and just I know, but you would have the big accent, you know. Southern accents are, no, I would think after being there for a while you would kind of pick that up, but you don't seem to have picked up much of a Southern drawl at all.
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep very very close to my roots. My mom still lives in New Jersey, my sister lives in New Jersey, my whole fam, I'm the only one that's not in New Jersey. My dad passed away 5 years ago, but he loved coming to South Carolina, and I think that's kind of what also, so I'm very much like my father, and so I think that's what stemmed my, like, you know, I was like, well, I can get pretty far away from New Jersey, I can get away from the cold, but mom and dad will still come and visit me, and so that's kind of how I ended up in South Carolina and then Savannah. So my dad would always come and visit, and you know, I've definitely tried not to let go of my roots. But my husband was born and raised in South Georgia. Like, he couldn't get any more Southern if he tried. And it's, you know, it's comical. So he always makes me laugh because of the things that he says and how he says them. And I still, to this day, will be like, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Like, what? What did you just say?
Cute. So, is that how you gardened, learned how to garden organically, from your dad then?
Yeah, I mean, we never used any kind of chemicals. I don't even remember us using Miracle-Gro. It was always, I would get, sometimes we would get manure from the horses, and mix that in, but pretty much, I mean, our soil was good, healthy soil, and we didn't have, in New Jersey, I don't know that there's a ton of issues with bugs, like we have a lot in South Carolina. It gets hot pretty quickly in the year, and so there's never really a time that the bugs die off, but I think that's a beautiful thing about New Jersey, is that, you know, you are able still to, you probably do get some problems with bugs and critters, but not, I haven't gardened in New Jersey as an adult, but I would think maybe not as bad as it gets in the South.
I had this other woman on, Mandy Girth, who's from Indiana, and she talked about how Montanans don't know, like, you know, you have your you know, challenges with the climate, but she's like, you have no idea how much easier it is to grow here, because you just don't get the huge bug infestations she used to have to deal with in Indiana. And I can imagine the South's probably even worse.
And yeah, go ahead. No, I was just gonna say, we get, you know, like on our tomatoes we get horned worms and things like that, but for the most part, you know, it's little tiny infestations that you don't really see it happening until it's kind of taken over everything.
We had that. Mike brought in this head of broccoli the other day, and I went to clean it, and I swear it looked like it was moving. It was so covered in bugs. I was like, oh my gosh. But I went down there, and it's funny because it's only on that one head of broccoli, and it only seems to be on that one plant. I haven't seen those bugs anywhere else. And I was trying to figure out, because I've had listeners talk about like letting one plant like be the sacrifice. So I was trying to decide, should I pull that thing and get it out of there so the bugs like don't spread to the other plants, or should we just leave it there so it is the sacrifice? So if any listeners are out there and they know the answer to that question, I'm kind of curious about that. Yeah, I was going to do some research on it.
I certainly don't know like the, you know, what would work best, but I have left plants to be the sacrificial plant. And then the other thing, I mean, we grow in such, like when we grow our, for example, like tomato plants, our, for our first crop of tomato plants, I had 60 plants that we planted.
60?
Yeah. And so we do a lot, and they're in different areas. So you're going to get some that are successful. You're going to get some that are not successful, but at the end of the day, we're still going to get a lot of tomatoes. I mean, I had a ton of tomatoes that, you know, had been eaten, that were rotting. I had leaves that were being eaten like by the hornworms, but this was in like one area. And then I have another area with the tomatoes, and they did great. And, so I still got tomatoes from those plants that had the infestation, but even the tomatoes that I didn't use, and this is the beautiful thing about having like a very diverse farm, is that all of those plants that I wasn't able to eat myself went to the chickens, went to the hogs. And so, you know, there was really not very much waste on the farm in general. But I can see it being really frustrating for people that don't have chickens that are going to throw away. You know, I probably gave to the animals throughout that harvest, maybe 4 or 5 gallon buckets of, you know, rotting or eaten tomatoes from bugs. But because we're in, you know, we have the ability to do so many in different areas on the land, that we can kind of find what works best and then, kind of learn every year and go from there.
Awesome. I like that. That's what we were talking about actually, we didn't give that particular head of broccoli to the chickens because we're like in wildfire evacuation, pre-evacuation mode. And so I had taken the chickens out of town, and they were at the fairgrounds. But I went and picked them up again yesterday, if you can hear my rooster in the background. So hopefully we're doing better. I don't know if we have to catch them again. I just couldn't leave them in those cages any longer. I left them in there for like 4 days, and finally I was like, you know, I don't know, hopefully we'll catch them again if we have to, but you never know. Anyway, what I was gonna tell, this funny story about manure that we always, like, my family, I can still remember my dad like calling my mom up one day. He like for some reason had to go to the Jacob Javits Center in New York City for some restaurant salesman conference or something, and coming back through Penn Station, the circus was in town. And so he calls my mom, he's like, you have to come pick me up at the train station today. And so we all rushed down to the train, you know, and this is way back before cell phones, you know, so. And here he is with these two giant bags of elephant manure that he's brought home from the train that he talked the circus trainer into giving him for the garden. And it's just like, that's like so my dad. Like, he's the kind of dad who would like, and it, like, it cracks me up because I can just like feel my dad when my personality puts me in like, you know, just like talk to anybody mode. Like, I am definitely one of those people that can talk to just about anybody sitting like next to me on a train or in the supermarket or just like anywhere I am. Like, if I want to ask somebody something, I'm just going to go ahead and ask them. I know it's from all those years of going to do errands with my dad on Saturday morning or just hanging out with him. So that was something that you were talking about. That,
well, he sounds like he would have gotten along really well with my dad.
Yeah. So, and I lost my dad just about the same time as you did, 2013.
Wow.
So it's been just 4 years. So, yeah. Anyway, why don't you tell us about something that grew well this year?
So we had cucumbers that did excellent. We had, zucchini that did great. Peppers are always, bell peppers, jalapeno peppers are, always grow really well. We had strawberries that did really well. You know, a lot of our crops did great. We had, I'm still getting cucumbers, but I'm about to do my fall garden, and then we'll do a winter garden. And that's the beautiful thing about, you know, the South, is that the weather is so good. But I probably started with my planting and seeds and seedlings probably back in March. And so I've been, you know, going at it now for a while. But we had a great summer of crops. We had broccoli that was finishing off in the spring, and it got to the point where I couldn't even, you know, we had so much broccoli that I let the chickens into the broccoli patch, and the rabbits went into the broccoli patch, and everybody just, you know, had a field day. I'm really pleased with how the summer went.
So now, like, how big is your guys' farm?
So we have 2 acres, which is, you know, it's not big by any means, but we utilize it really well. We don't have a big house. We actually live in an RV. And so we live in an RV. We have like a big deck off of the back of the RV. And then we have a guest house for visitors that we built. And other than that, everything is paddock, pens, built barn, chicken areas. We have a pond for drainage, which we use as our swimming hole. And there's still more land that we can do things with. And so I do a lot of raised beds for the gardening. I really like that because then it also gives me the opportunity, if I want to move them, I can. And so we do, you know, we do that. And some areas in the ground we'll also plant, and we just kind of utilize as much of the property as we can.
And then, no, I'm just a tiny bit confused. Do you live in Savannah or you live in South Carolina?
So we live right outside of Savannah in South Carolina. So my husband and I both commute about 40 minutes to work every day.
Okay. Savannah's in Georgia, South Carolina. Okay. And then do you take your stuff to market, or do you just have a CSA, or how does that
work? I don't have a CSA. Oh. This has been, you know, this is something that I've been working on now, like I said, for about two plus years, and only in the last, maybe this summer, really, have we gotten to the point where I've started selling publicly. And so I do a lot of advertising through Facebook groups, and then just people, you know, that I know through work, you know, a lot of word of mouth, and they'll buy chickens, they'll buy the vegetables that we have. And I really haven't started doing anything official yet, just to kind of give myself the freedom of, like, if I don't get to butcher chickens, or if I don't, you know, if I don't get to pick my plants, if I'm busy with the kid, or, you know, anything else, if we're doing stuff, you know, it kind of gives me the freedom to market when I want, how I want, and, you know, sell when I'm ready. But as we are growing and getting more established, I'm definitely looking for more of a regular schedule with it. So CSA is certainly something that I have been considering.
You are just amazing. I can't believe how you have time to do all of this. And then the other thing is, like, your posts are just, I mean, I guess it's because maybe you do it, like, I was just going to say, they're so professional looking, and they just, like, suck you in, and your captions just match, like, everything that's going on. It's just, you have a really nice, but I guess you have that digital design background, but it definitely shows. So is there something you're excited to try next year, or something you want to do different next year?
So I think, I'm definitely, our winter garden is normally really kind of lame. You know, it's like mustard greens and broccoli is really all it is. But I've kind of gotten a a schedule down of all the possibilities that you can grow in our climate throughout the entire year without a greenhouse. And I am really quite pumped to kind of utilize that list and diversify the products that I, you know, that I'm bringing. The other thing is my husband is incredibly handy. He's done all of the work on the farm. So everything that's built, all the fencing, everything that's done, he's done that. And so we've got a lot of projects that we're going to be starting. We're going to put a new deck off of the guest house, kind of connecting it toward the RV deck. And hopefully maybe I'm thinking in the next year we will do offers for farm stays. That would be something that I would like to get into.
Okay,
I want to start offering.
Oh,
sure, go ahead.
I was just like, what do you mean farm stays? Like for like an Airbnb where guests would just come visit, like a bed and breakfast type of thing, or like for like woofers who want to come work and stay?
So I'm hoping to do like an agrication, so like some agri education.
Awesome.
With people that are interested in, and I've tried to buy that URL and it's taken like on every single level. However, I'm going to be still playing with it, trying to figure out how I can do it. But I want to have people, like, I think in October we're going to have an offering where 10 people can come and they get to see how the chickens are selected for butchering. They can butcher their own chicken if they would like, or I'll do it for them, and then see how it is plucked and cleaned, and then they get to take a chicken home. And so, you know, they pay a certain amount of money and they get to experience that and go home with a fresh chicken. So kind of like, you know, offering a farm stay where, you know, a couple can come, or a couple and a, you know, maybe two kids, get their eggs, offer them like kind of a camping experience where they'll be in a guest house, but cooking over, you know, campfire, and they can choose to, you know, do some butchering if they would like. We've got 3 pigs right now that are getting ready to be butchered. So I would love to have, you know, maybe an event, not necessarily where people see the butchering, the slaughtering of the pigs, but you know, they can come and they can see the meat being cut and processed and choose cuts that they would like. So really just like opening the farm up to people that are interested in learning more about how this type of life works, as well as for kids that are, you know, that have no idea where their meat comes from. My sister came down from Rhode Island. Well, she lives in Jersey now, but she came to visit. She has 3 kids. They are, you know, absolutely wild, but love them to death, but they are so crazy. And so they came down to the farm for a week, and probably it was like the best thing that they could have done, because they got to like just run free like little animals for a whole week. But, you know, I wanted to do some butchering, and my sister was like, oh, no. Like, the kids can't see that. I don't want them to see that. Well, my nephew, who is 7, was like all about the butchering. We looked at, you know, we butchered the chicken, we killed the chicken, he helped me pluck the feathers, we cut the chicken open, we looked at the heart and the lungs and the eyeballs and you know, every kind of bit and piece that you would look at. And it really, I mean, I think it was great for him. And so, you know, my sister thought it would just be way too hard, way too difficult, but I think people underestimate children all the time. And he loved it, and it was so educational. So that is something that I would love to bring. So hopefully, you know, like I said, within the next year, offering up our guest house for people to come stay for a weekend. You know, not, they don't have to help on the farm if they don't want to. They can just sit and read if they want. But having the ability to say, like, you know, what is your stay going to be like? Are you expecting just a quiet getaway, or are you wanting to learn a little bit about, you know, animals and plants and gardening? I'd love to do like a, you know, a class on a weekend where you can teach people about starting seedlings, or, you know, different kind of like gardening techniques and things that are lacking in today's society.
I I love all of this. And I think that, like, one of the big things is that, so you're this, you know, used to be a vegetarian. And so I think there's probably a large piece of compassion when you're butchering your animals. And you were like the perfect person to be teaching this. And like one of my most downloaded episodes was Kim Romelli from New Zealand, who talked about cruelty free living. So I think people are going to love to hear this. And I just think that's such a great idea. You are such a natural educator. And I like that other piece. Like I keep thinking about, cause so we're up here near Glacier National Park, and I just keep thinking of all these ideas because I'm sure how many zillions of couples come to Glacier, or families, where one person wants to go on like a big 10-mile hike and the other person, like, they don't want to go hiking maybe at all, or they just want to do a little short 1 mile, you know, 1 hour hike or 2 hour hike, you know, they don't want to go away. And like a way for people to like have both vacations possible where one person's happy, but the other person doesn't have to hike alone in the woods and like can meet up with other people. Like I just keep, you know, so I think your place would be like that, like with the animals, like maybe one person's interested, but the other, and like with your sister, with the three kids. Yeah. Are all three kids going to want to learn how to butcher a chicken? Probably not. But that one little 7-year-old who's like, you know, just excited about it and wants to learn, like that's the perfect opportunity. And, you know, it's so true. And I think it helps kids develop an appreciation for their food and develop an appreciation for just life in general. And then, of course, you know, the whole science, that kid might become a scientist today because you touched him that way, you know, in the future. So that's all awesome. And I just think, you know, you guys are just your total, you know, get out there and try it and get your hands dirty. And then in the meantime, you're both working and, you know, and learning and building your place slowly and, you know, trying different things. So I think listeners are going to love this episode. So do you want to tell us about something that didn't work so well this season, or maybe didn't go the way you thought it was gonna?
Sure. Yeah. We, this has been the rainiest summer in Savannah by far, the rainiest summer that we've had in years. And you can talk to older farmers and they'll tell you that they don't ever remember it. You know, they can't remember a time that it was as rainy as it is. It's felt like, you know, 90 days and 90 nights of rain, if not more. It's actually sunny right now, but I can guarantee you it will pour today at some point.
Okay, well, blow some of that rain my way.
Right? So it's great for a lot of reasons, but it's also made it a little bit difficult for, you know, building structures that we've wanted to work on. Our hog pen has been, you know, underwater with like maybe some areas of dry space. And this is a big hog pen that's, you know, it's about 100 by 50 feet. And so you can imagine how much mud and muck is there. But then also on the planting side and the seedling started, because I don't use a greenhouse and I focus everything outside, I was kind of, you know, planting my seedlings and then putting them out outside and then I would water them. Well, of course, I was getting these downpours and it got to the point where, like, my seedlings were getting washed right out of the cups. And so I spent a lot of time and a lot of energy planting these little seedlings that, you know, yes, I got 60 tomatoes, which was great, but I had cucumbers that I ended up, I think I spent time planting about 60, trying to start 60 cucumber seedlings, and I lost every single one of them. So that would have been for like the second, go around for my cucumbers. It was, you know, carrots were the same way. It was once I got past like the March, April time period where my seedlings were doing really well and I started to plan for my July and August seedlings, it was, all of my work was washed away. So blessings in disguise, I guess, you know, water is excellent. But for that, it was hard. So I think I'll probably be doing a little bit of a different style. I may keep them under, you know, keep them on the deck, under our porch and, just kind of water them and let them get sun but not, you know, too much sun. And it was hard because it rains really, really hard, and then the sun comes out and it's very, very hot. And then it gets dry, and then it was a battle with the climate this summer for our, like right now I don't really have that many crops, and everyone's like, well, what vegetables do you have right now? And I'm like, I don't have really any, because, you know, my tomatoes have already been harvested. I have more growing now. But, you know, that's kind of, it's a waiting game. It's waiting for all these new plants now to produce, when I should have had tomatoes. You know, there should never have been a break in my crops, I guess, but it happens. And so I guess that's the beautiful thing about not having a CSA, is that, it's okay. Like, I don't have to stress out because I've guaranteed people that I'm going to have these crops, and then I don't. So as I'm learning, as I go, as I'm figuring out the, you know, the southern climate and really growing more plants. I mean, my husband helps me a lot with the growing stuff, but he's never done it on the scale that I'm trying to do it on. And so we're both kind of learning as we go.
Appreciate this, because, like, so my husband planted this mini farm this year. Like, I don't know, when did we dig the well? In 2014? 2013, I don't know, we dug a deep well. So we really, like, this is really our first year where we could really get our mini farm off the ground. And he has grown so much food, so much more food than we've ever grown before. But I still constantly feel this pressure. Like, why aren't you guys going to market yet? Why don't you have more food? Why aren't you making money off of all this food? Like, how much time and energy are you putting into this? And why aren't you? But that learning curve from growing food for your family to growing food to market. Like, I was looking at these people that live near here, Jay and Mandy, that have this place called Lower Valley Farm. And, like, when I look at her farm stand, I'm like, how do you do this? And there's just the two of them. And they have three kids they're raising in the meantime besides. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I look at what my husband's done and how much food he's producing. But, like, and then I also, like, I used to ask this question about my big thing is harvest, because it seems like everything's coming on at once, and we have done a better job, I think, this year, but still, like, it's coming. I can see it. Like, the days are coming where, like, all the green beans are going to be ready all at once, all the carrots are going to be ready all at once, like,
right,
everything's about to come on. And then I'm about to go back to school, which, thank God, Mike takes care of 90% of it. But it just seems like the challenges are just never ending. So I have a question for you about, like, you said, like, you have this plan, the schedule, like, where'd you come up with that? Like, are you using a book, or are you using, like, do you just have, like, an Excel spreadsheet? Like, how are you coming up with the schedule? You seem so organized.
I'm pretty organized. I have to be. Otherwise I think I would lose my mind. I've always been, like, an organizer and a planner, but I don't have an Excel spreadsheet. I basically have, like, some things written down. And my big thing is, I don't know what your, like, you know, for your listeners and for yourself, what your feed stores are like, but we have feed-in seeds everywhere. I mean, there's one probably, you know, within a 20-minute drive from our location. Yeah, there's a ton of feed-in seeds around. And so, you know, the feed-in seeds are run a lot of times by older farmers or by people that have been in the industry for a long time, and they're a wealth of information. And then the other beautiful thing about my job is that because I am an account executive in sales, all I do is cold call. And I don't, you know, there's not one specific type of business that I choose to speak to about services that we offer. It's everyone. So if I have the opportunity to go into a feed and seed and connect to somebody on a level that, you know, is more personal, even if I get no business from it, maybe I gain some knowledge for myself. So when I'm in outer lying areas of Savannah, because Savannah is a city, sure, but, you know, you drive 30 minutes outside of Savannah and you're into nothing. You know, there's nothing there. There's farms and a lot of agriculture. And so you run upon these businesses that service these ag operations, and you can talk to a lot of people. So your local feed stores, your local nurseries are a wealth of information. I mean, the internet's great, but I love, because I connect with people all day, because all I do is talk to people and, you know, market our company, not the farm, but my company that I work for as a, you know, in my career. It's great to just be able to connect with these you know, these older generation farmers that may look at you and be like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Well, I might not know everything, but I do have a little farm. And, you know, people think that's interesting. And then you can get talking and talk to them about what they have going on and what they've found successful. And some of the feed stores, even like there's one of them that gives you actually has they want to promote their seed sales. And so they've come up with a list. It's just like a Word document that they print and leave in their store. And it has the dates, like, you know, March through April, what should you plant? And it's really helpful. And then you can take that list and add on to it and talk to different people. And my husband is, you know, he's also a wealth of information because he's been growing his own plants for a very long time. He's actually much older than I am. So he, my page on Instagram, I think, says like old school knowledge with new ideas on, you know, sustainability and something, something. But he is the old school knowledge. That is my husband. So he's, you know, he's helpful in that regard as well.
Aw, we have so much in common. My husband's 14 years older than I am, too.
Oh, so how about that? Okay, cool.
I know how that goes. Well, excellent. And that's funny because, like, one of my favorite jobs was I did sales for the printer in town. I kind of managed it, but I started out as their salesman. And I love that, too, like that getting to go around and meet different people. And then, you know, we're a small community. So, like, I'd walk into the grocery store and the manager would be like, hey, I need business cards this week while you're here, you know, and just I love the flexibility of getting to get out. And you do meet so many people and just but I'm still curious about, like, your planning schedule. Like, so then you take these just pieces of information and, like, put it together and, like, you know, I don't know. I guess this is what's, like, getting to me this year is thinking about, like, all these people talking about, you know, your ground shouldn't be bare and something should always be growing. And, like, we've always just been kind of, like, in the Rocky Mountains feeling like, you know, the soonest you can get the stuff in the ground and you're going to be lucky if you can get it out. But I'm seeing there are all these other crops that we could have been in, like, thinking about, well, is it too late to try to put something in now? Like, we have a few beds that are just bare and I'm like, should I put something in? I did plant this one fall lettuce garden for the first time that I have done the end of July, and it's coming up nicely, which is kind of cool to see. But just, I don't know, that whole planning piece, I guess, has been a challenge for me.
It's hard. I mean, you know, we wanted to plow a portion for, you know, this garden that I want to start for the fall. However, because it's so wet, there's no way that, you know, we can do any plowing. The tractor would get stuck and it'd be more of a headache than it's been a help. And so, you know, I'm making more beds, and that's what's happening, but it's slowly but surely. And, shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know, who's to say that you should do this and you have to do that. I mean, you have to do it at what feels comfortable. And that's always a big, you know, that's important in anything that you do. I've always been, the kind of person that, you know, if you tell me that I need to do something, I'm going to end up doing the opposite because that's just how I am. Like my mom, you know, if you talk to her when she found out I was pregnant, it was like, oh my God, now this. And it's turned out where I'm like, you know, she loves my life and she comes down and she'll have to go inside and like take breaks from the heat. She's, and the bugs, like, oh my God, it's so hot out. Oh my God, I'm sweating. Oh, the bugs.
Don't you keep your bugs outside? That's what my dad said when he came. My husband's like, well, don't you have bugs in New York? And he's like, well, we keep our bugs outside.
Yeah, yeah. You know, she loves coming to visit and she thinks like our lifestyle with our daughter is awesome. But ask her, you know, ask her what she thought, you know, 3 years ago about life. She would tell me. Yeah, so no, ask my mom 3 years ago and she would have told you I was riding down a very slippery slope. But she really loves, you know, our lifestyle and she thinks what we're doing is great. And it's one of those things that, like I said, with the CSA and having, you know, you have a plan, that's great, but life happens and you can only do what you can do and you have to have the energy and we're only humans and you just can't let people dictate kind of what your style is, I guess. And And it's great to say you should always have something in your beds and it should never be bare. But at the end of the day, you know, life is life, and you can only do what you can do. So I'd say for you to just continue to, I say to myself, I just want to do better today than I did yesterday. You know, and whether that's the way I speak to my daughter or how I talk to my husband or the effort that I give on the farm, you know, that's all my goal is better than yesterday.
I love that. I knew a guy in college that would always say something about you need to be the best you can be today and just try to get up every day and just try to be just like you're saying, just a little bit better than the day before. Just always trying to be the best me I can be today. So is your plan eventually that you would make a living off of your farm and you guys would get to quit your day jobs, or are you just kind of doing it as a part-time thing, or?
That would be the dream, right? So there's goals and then there's dreams. And so the goal would be, the goal would be to, you know, to do this to the point where I can consider living my dream. And then to live your dream, it's about seeing how scared you are and, you know, how scared are you to take that jump to say, I can do this. We can make it happen. If it gets hard, that's okay. I mean, farming is really hard, and you're never going to make, yeah, as a small farm, you'll never make $1 million. I mean, it just is what it is. But can we sustain? Can we be happy? And how afraid am I to let go of everything else that I've ever known and do this? So that's a dream. But for now, we work toward our goals, and hopefully we can achieve our goals to the point where we say our dreams are getting – Our dreams are becoming a reality, I guess.
Aww, I love that. And who was John Lee Dumas was talking one day about, like, $75,000, he was saying, was kind of like the golden point. Like, some people think they want to be a millionaire and they want to have all this money, but they, I don't know, it was some study or something, they found that, like, getting up to that $70,000 a year point was pretty hard, but most people, once they got there, we're pretty happy. And then once you make the jump past that, you're going right back into that whole stress, like super stress thing. So like really wanting to make $1 million a year might not be the dream because of what it takes to get to that point. So,
yeah. And I mean, I agree. I think you're absolutely right. I think at 70 grand, you start to qualify yourself more for that more expensive lifestyle. Whereas, you know, if at 70 grand, you're like, dang, we're doing really good. Like we're living within our means. Look, we got to take this trip, and you don't have a desire for an expensive lifestyle. 70 grand is a great number for, you know, an individual.
Yeah, I think so too. That's what I always feel like. I just want to be comfortable. I just want to, like, you know that, you know, we can buy our food, pay our electric bill at the beginning of the month, you know, have a reliable car to drive, like have, you know, be able to get food, you know, and have health insurance is a big one for me. So,
yeah.
And I'm sure for everybody.
And it's scary. I mean, it's scary right now because we don't necessarily have like a, you know, a big savings account. We don't have like a nest egg because everything that we're doing, all the money that we save every month goes right back into a building or a structure or a backhoe that we need to rent to bring this or that, or, you know, so our property has grown, you know, substantially, but at the end of the day, it's like, God, if something were to happen, we've been so focused on growing our business that, you know, we haven't taken that step to say like, we need to hoard all this money. So it's scary, you know, running a business is scary. Making improvements is scary. Hoping for the best where, you know, like I said, you work towards your goals and then say, you know, is this going to pay off in the end where a dream becomes a reality? It's a scary thing, but you just have to decide how scared you are.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, I always tell people, because, like, I'm on job, I think, number 53 or something. Like, you know, being stuck to a job, or, you know, thinking that it's all going to go one way, you never know. You never know when you can get laid. Like, when I got laid off from Head Start, I couldn't believe it. I was so, like, you know, committed to being here. And then my mom, like, that was another one. Working 40 hours a week, I worked full-time at Head Start. She was baffled. How could I not have health insurance? And just, you just never know. Things can happen. Things can change. You know, all of a sudden our center changed. Like, you never know anymore. There's no guarantees. So it's better to be working towards something. And then here we are sitting here in wildfire season. I mean, we could lose our house. Like, our neighbors were evacuated. The fire's a mile from my house right now. And, like, you know, hopefully they're gonna, but you just never know. So it's better to be working towards your dreams and just, keep going and enjoy the journey, I think, is the biggest important part. You know, enjoy each day.
I agree.
Because that's really all you got. You can think about the future and you can think about the past, but really all we've got right now is what we've got. Before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. SimplyJosephine.com.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like the other Green Future growers. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get listening to your first audiobook today. We're about to get to the root of things, and my question for you is, like, is there an activity that's, like, your least favorite activity to do in the garden or on your farm? Like, something you just got to force yourself to get out there and do?
I can't stand weeding. I don't know why. I can't stand it. So, yeah, I definitely have to force myself to weed. And a lot of times I don't, you know, there are patches and beds that will get to the point where, like, I can't even see the strawberries, for example. You know, it's the off season for the strawberries right now, but they're still alive, but they're not producing. And so it gets to the point where, like, oh, I can't even see the plants anymore. I guess I better weed this out. And I do, but yeah, I don't know why I can't stand that. Maybe because it was always a chore, growing up. Marissa, you need to weed the garden. And you know, I was like, oh man, like vacuuming the pool. Weeding I can't take.
And then on the flip side, like, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
I love harvesting. I love harvesting with my daughter. She'll come out and she'll pick tomatoes, and she, you know, she just turned 2. She's learning her colors, and I try and tell her to pick the red ones. But she'll just pick them all and eat, you know, the green ones too. And at the end of the day, my husband gets so annoyed. Dude, we have.
I don't know what's going on.
That's okay.
Okay, your daughter's picking red and green tomatoes.
Yeah. So she'll pick the red ones, she'll pick the green ones, you know, and she'll eat either color. It doesn't matter. And my husband gets, you know, super annoyed about it. And I'm just like, dude, just chill. Like, we got plenty of tomatoes. If she has a stomach ache later, we'll deal with it then. Like, it's fine. But she's, you know, she's great. She helps with the cucumbers. And then she does, like, the dirty work. So if I need, you know, if I have, like, a bunch of bad tomatoes, I'm like, please go give these to the chickens. And then, like, I can stay in the garden. And she takes them and gives them to her chickens. And, you know, she actually helps. I mean, you know, yeah. helps to a degree, helps me over a ledge, but she helps. So she's good.
I love that. So how about what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
I think the best gardening advice that I don't know if I've, you know, if it was ever like somebody said something that was so, you know, that stopped me in my tracks, but I would say, you know, just getting out there and trying it. You never know what you're going to get. I remember with my dad, it was like, well, we'll try it. Like we never had success with pumpkins and watermelons up north, which we should be able to grow pumpkins, no problem. And every single year it was like, you know, well, let's try it. Let's try it different this time. And it's just about trying it. I mean, yes, it's an investment. You buy the seeds or you buy the plants and, you know, it can get expensive, but at the end of the day, the learning curve, like you said, is huge. And you learn a little bit more as you go and just doing it, just try it is all I could say. You know, if you have a question about something, you know, that you can't find an answer for, well, just try it.
I love that. We have a really hard time with pumpkins. And Mike grew these little mini watermelons one year. He got these seeds that were like from Russia or Siberia or something that were specially made. And they were so good. They came out really cute. But yeah, he didn't plant any of those this year, I don't think. Or maybe he does. Maybe they're growing and I don't even know it.
You know what? What always works for my watermelons? Anytime I try and plant watermelons, it never works. But if I go out and we just spit seeds in the yard just because we're eating watermelon, I always find watermelons growing later.
Oh.
It's crazy.
And then they actually produce fruit. Like they actually produce watermelons that you can eat.
Yes. I have a watermelon growing in one of my tomato patches right now. I didn't put it there. I'm sure that my daughter did something with a seed and now it's growing and it's like taking over the patch. But I'm certainly not going to rip it up. We'll see what happens with it. Maybe last year we had a hurricane that was really bad. And there was one watermelon that was actually growing out of our deck. And it was spared in the hurricane, but I have like a picture, you know, we evacuated and took all the animals and, I was like, please, you know, pray for our watermelon. Cause it was just one random watermelon coming up from our deck. It was really funny. But yeah, you never know. So spit some seeds around.
Awesome. Well, that's a good tip to hear. I'm surprised you can even find watermelons with seeds in them. It seems like all the watermelons at our grocery store are those new seedless kind.
Well, yeah, we have because watermelons are huge here. And so we can, you can go and every old farmer and their mom's got their pickup truck loaded down with watermelons that they came from the field. You can go and buy them and they'll start trying to sell them for like $8 a watermelon, but you can normally work them down to about $4. And yeah, you can get some fresh from the field watermelons. They're in abundance here.
Wow. All right. How about a favorite tool you like to use? Like if you had to move and could only take one tool for you or evacuate, what would, could you not live without? I know my broad fork's sitting right next to my pickup ready to go.
Yeah, I was looking at this question, trying to think about it. And like, I don't know. I was thinking like my gardening gloves.
Cool.
Because I don't use a ton of tools. Like I might, you know, I do beds, you know, I use a lot of raised beds. And so I mostly just use my hands and maybe like a spade. But I think my gardening gloves are my most prized possession.
Now, do you have like a special kind you wear? Or do you just like use just like the regular gardening gloves or like leather gloves or like what kind of gloves do you like? I'm a gloves girl.
Myself. Yeah, I got so I put, because I work all the time and my finger, my nails are always disgusting. I put rubber gloves, like surgical gloves underneath of, just a pair of like leather, you know, mechanic gloves. And that's what I do, to keep my scrubbing at the end of the night at a minimum.
How about your favorite recipe to cook from the garden?
I love fried zucchini flowers. So I like to stuff them with goat cheese. And then salt, pepper, flour, lightly, You can toss them an egg if you want, and then roll them in the flour, and then just sear them in olive oil until they're crispy. And that's, I like that more than zucchinis themselves. I just, that it has cheese. I mean, everything is better with cheese, goat cheese especially. I love that. And then we jar our tomatoes every year, not all of them, but a lot of them. And so we'll use that sauce for tomato sauce, for pasta, and so different things like that.
I don't know, but somebody told me once about picking the zucchini flowers that you have to make sure, like, there's the male flowers and the female flowers. And I've been meaning to look this up on Google and I just haven't, but like, I have been looking at my flowers really hard this year. And the only difference I can see is like, some of them will have like four stamens in the middle of them and some will have just one giant one, but I don't see any that like, how do you tell the difference between a flower? Because she told me, don't, when you're eating those flowers, don't pick the, I don't know, is it the females that are going to turn into the fruit? I don't even know.
So, I don't know anything about males and females. But I do know that when the flowers get on the very high stem, like if you look at your zucchini plant, there are going to be flowers that are on very, very short stems toward the base of the plant. And then there are flowers that come way up and they grow kind of toward the leaves. Those, I've always harvested those. And they normally, if they're on a long stem, they're done. There's no way they're going to turn into a zucchini because your zucchini plant itself is always down toward the base. And so I snip those and then I pull the pollen portion out of it. Just because that's kind of hard to digest. I mean, maybe, you know, everybody's different, but that's never something, it's just, it doesn't add anything for me. So I take that out and that's it. I mean, it doesn't get more complicated than that. Does it have a long stem? Yep. All right. Cutting it off.
There you go. Okay, cool. We have so many flowers this year and they're just monster flowers. So I might try that. Just wrap them up with some goat cheese. My mom always made zucchini and pumpkin fritters, but she never put goat cheese in them that I remember. That sounds delicious. Ugh,
I love goat cheese. I mean, you could do fresh mozzarella if you'd like, but I just, you know, there's not too many things here with my, first of all, you can't get goat cheese in the store, but stores nearby us, just because we live in the middle of nowhere and it's, you know, it's like, hoop cheese is like hoop cheddar cheese is like what you can get specialty cheese, but otherwise it's like, you know, the Kraft singles that have plastic on them, which is terrible. So whenever I'm in Savannah and I want like something special, then I'll grab a thing of goat cheese. And but yeah, it's interesting how like there you can't get, unless you travel like, you know, 40 minutes to a different grocery store in a more populated area, you're not going to see like the really good stuff.
I guess I haven't really tried goat cheese. I'm gonna have to try that. My friend Marissa, who talked about cooking a lot, cooked a lot with goat cheese. So I'm glad you said that you could use like fresh mozzarella or something like that.
Yeah, even if you don't like goat cheese, there's plenty. Listen, I never met a cheese I didn't like. There's anything tastes better with cheese. Just pick your favorite cheese and stuff those flowers and enjoy them.
Okay, cool. How about a favorite internet resource? Is there somewhere on the web that you like to go a lot?
I just really like, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love this podcast. I like, there's a Farm Marketing Solutions podcast that I listen to. There's a couple other podcasts that I like that are really helpful. And then just really Google and the different, you know, with our birds, there's a lot of Facebook groups even that you can join that are people that have, you know, chickens and dogs and, you know, you can ask them a question and they'll give you an answer. And it's just a great, you know, if you're completely lost as to like where to even look for something that's going on, post a picture, they'll, you know, a few people will give you their opinion, Google those specific things.
Yeah, Facebook groups are the best. I don't know how people survive without Facebook. I'm just, I don't know. I don't get it, but.
Yeah. It's that, you know, sometimes it can be frustrating because you definitely can hear things that are either like ridiculous or not helpful or, you know, just like offensive, but there's also really great information on Facebook too.
Do you, so since you have a business and then you also have this nice little advertising marketing background, like, do you have some advice for listeners for how to get started with a farm or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on my website right now. So that is coming. I just recently registered as an LLC, and got like my tax ID number. And then once I did that, you know, I started kind of with to really tracking what's happening with my finances and opened a separate bank account for farm stuff. So with my, how I collect my money from like all my sales is through either Venmo, which is connected directly to that account, which is a free app, as well as cash. It's called Venmo. It's V-E-N-M-O. And it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's a very millennial seeming app. You use emojis to describe what people are paying you for. But it's fun and it's free. And people, most people that are buying from me have that. And if they don't, they have cash. And so I'm able to transfer directly to my bank account within, you know, less than 24 hours from that, or I can even pay people from Venmo. So that's a great app. So definitely kind of having a system where you're figuring out, all right, where's the income? How am I depositing it? We had like a jar that we were putting all of our like egg, chicken, rabbit money in. But I've gotten, you know, more sophisticated with it. And then just, you know, making sure that you've got fun social posts, great pictures. Photography has always been something I've enjoyed. So that's something that, you know, I'm able to bring to my farm, but, you know, stock images you can always use if you're not a very good photographer or don't quite have an eye or have the time, or the weather doesn't agree. And just, you know, just making it happen for yourself, putting out the energy and seeing what comes. I use Facebook advertising. I don't spend a ton of money, but I probably spend about $50 a month advertising for, you know, if I have chicken, fresh chicken for sale, or if I have, you know, pork or rabbit or vegetables, join an email list. I send email blasts. So there's a lot of different things that you can do, and some free, some costs, like the advertising on Facebook, of course, you know, costs, but if you put the energy into sending email blasts and compiling an email list, then that's free that you can use unless you choose to pay somebody to do it for you. So a lot of different options.
Wow. You're the first one that's talked about Facebook advertising. You're way ahead of me. I'm like, I don't even have a jar for my egg money. Well, I don't know. I guess we don't really sell eggs, but.
Well, I have quite a few chickens. I probably have almost 100 chickens.
Oh, wow.
So.
And the other thing I was going to say, good for you getting all that set up, because one thing, I went to this farming financial workshop thing and the lady from the bank was talking about if you want to apply for a really low interest, good deal on a farm loan, you have to have 3 years of taxes where you filed some farm form
income
that says like you are a farm. Yeah. Even if you don't,
gotcha.
Even if you don't make any income, but there's this one form,
okay,
that you have to have listed on your taxes for 3 years in a row in order to be eligible to apply for that loan. And I hope I did file that this year. Cause, I was telling Mike, maybe we could get him a tractor that way. He really wants a tractor and it just seems like we can never come up with the money to get a tractor. And so.
Yes. Tractors are, yes, they are, quite the helpful tool. We have some neighbors that have tractors. We don't have our own. And so we'll have them come and plow for us or whatever. But yes, a tractor is on our goal list for sure.
I told him, like, because I keep going back to that couple, Mandy and Jay from Lower Valley Farm. She talks about this hand tractor.
Well, it could be the fact that I live in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, I have body coverage as well. I'm not sure.
And the weirdest thing
I was saying
was,
I'm ready.
Okay. I was talking and it like it didn't even record. So strange. It's got to be Skype, because the fact that it didn't even record, like I'm just going on and then I'm like, all right, and I'm like, what, you're not even there? And then I looked and it hadn't even recorded what I said, so I don't know what's going on today. Okay, here's my final question. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? Marissa, for example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
So, what a loaded question. What a complex question. I think first of all, I think America as a whole is so divided in our beliefs and what's happening. So I think first of all, you know, we got to figure out how we can all get on the same page with our environment and realizing that, you know, there is climate change happening. It's affecting all of us, and it's so, so very sad, because there's nothing that, until we all as a nation and as a world, as the world together can get on the same page. Nothing's going to change. I think, I would love to see more, I would love to see a change in the education system, toward more hands-on, in the field type learning, like I said, offering these aggregational, opportunities for families and children, and just learning more about your environment and where your food comes from and how, you can take, you know, from your chicken coop and the, you know, their waste and use it to grow your plants. And just really everybody taking a smaller step. I know I have a lot of friends that are very much, they're activists. I mean, much more so than me. And they're, one lives in Miami, one lives in California. And they are so down in the dumps because of, you know, what's happening. And I just tell them that, you know, you guys just have to do what you can do, because until everybody can realize what's happening, I mean, choosing to use, you know, reusable bags at the grocery store and choosing to go paperless, choosing to eat sustainable meat. I had somebody that commented on an ad that I had put out for chickens available, and he was like, not going to have any luck selling in Savannah because chickens $1.66 a pound. And it's things like that where people don't realize, like, okay, yes, $1.66 a pound for boneless, skinless chicken breast. That's excellent. If that is what you want to put into your body, if that's how you want, you know, the animals treated, and that's the price that you want to pay, or you can pay a few, you know, I charge $4 per pound for chicken. So pay just over $2 more. You're getting humanely raised, humanely butchered, non-GMO, free range, pastured chicken. And so it's just about, you know, and I think somebody like that would say something because maybe they're not familiar with, what it's like on a factory farm. And maybe if they saw or had a firsthand experience, they would realize, like, ooh, that's not what I want. So I think it's about education, and opening up our minds to, you know, the ideas that, you know, maybe the things that we've been doing for the last, you know, hundreds of years, maybe weren't the right way to do things. And it's time to try something else. It's time to get on a page where we're taking care of ourselves as humans. We're taking care of our animals. We're taking care of our plants and our gardens and our oceans.
Aww. I love all of that. You've been just such a wonderful guest. I know listeners are going to love this episode. Like, I've been going back through my stats and kind of looking at, like, you know, what episodes do people seem to really relate to? What blog posts are they going to? What pages? Like, well, I've had some time this summer to kind of go through the data. And, like, my show definitely, like, my listeners seem to have, like, a kind of political, you know, I'm seeing a lot more than just gardening, but there's definitely, you know, people who really talk about a passion for caring for our planet, caring for animals, there's definitely a thread there. And this, I mean, the sustainable agriculture piece, but so that makes me really happy because, you know, I live in a place where my ideas have gotten me in trouble in places I've worked frequently in some heated arguments. So even though I always try to, like, you know, I think one of my greatest gifts is getting along with a lot of different types of people, but I feel like we have to be able to express our ideas and understand people, each other, and even if we don't agree, we can still work together, we can still be friends, we can still get along. But definitely education and changing education, I agree with you there, and love all that. I love your how do you say it?
Aggregation.
I love that term. Yeah. So, not that you haven't already, but do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Yeah. So, I talk a lot about fear and, like, how scared are you, you know, to take that step. And I heard a quote, and it's on my Instagram, which is Whippoorwill Farms SC. And it just says, and it's a picture, if you scroll into our feed, it's a picture of my daughter and her nanny's two kids, my daughter being the shortest of them all, the littlest one. And they're looking out. We went for a bike ride on about maybe 4 miles down the road from us. There's a big, you know, an old man that's got a bunch of cows, and they're looking out in the cow field really wanting to go see these cows, but they're not allowed. And so I thought the quote was so fitting, and it says, everything you've ever wanted is on the other side of fear. And so how much, you know, how scared are you to take that leap? I mean, if you're, you know, if you're worrying that you're not going to succeed in a small garden, just doing it for yourself, it's okay. You know, like I told you, you know, it's totally okay to fail. It's okay not to do things like everybody else says that you should. And also, I don't know exactly how the quote goes, but it's something along the lines of, like, if you don't start living your dreams, you're going to be working for somebody making their dreams a reality, or mm-hmm. working toward your dreams, then you're going to be doing it for somebody else. And it's true. So, you know, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have a goal, if you don't have a dream, you know, think about it, what is your dream or your goal, and start taking small steps to do that, so that when you work your 9-to-5 job and you feel like you're in the corporate hustle, you can at least feel fulfilled. You can feel fulfilled outside of your regular job because you're living a life that makes you really proud.
I love all of that. And John Lee Dumas, the guy who taught me how to podcast, always says, all of the magic is outside of your comfort zone.
It's true. It's so true.
Yeah. And he always talks about, if you haven't done something every week to step outside of your comfort zone and face your fears and do something that takes some courage, you got to push yourself a little harder. So, well, you kind of mentioned your Instagram page, but, like, tell listeners how to connect with you.
So, yeah, like I said, my website is under construction, but it will be Whippoorwill Farms SC. Whippoorwill is the kind of bird. Beautiful sounding bird that comes out at night in the spring and early fall. You know that the cold weather is over when the whippoorwill comes out and starts singing. And so mm-hmm. it's Whippoorwill Farms with an S, and then SC for South Carolina. And that's our Instagram. That is our Facebook, and then our website will be that. And if you'd like to shoot me an email, my email is Marissa, M-A-R-I-S-S-A, at whippoorwillfarmssc.com.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today, and good luck with everything, and just have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too. And I hope to, you know, stay in contact. I'd love to hear about how, you know, your fall season goes and your winter. And then, of course, the fires that are happening. I'll definitely be thinking of you and hoping that you're staying safe. So please, you know, feel free to stay in touch with me. I'd love to continue to correspond.
Aw, thanks. Well, excellent. Well, I definitely want to keep in touch with you. So, hey, green future growers, Don't forget to get your copy of the 2018 Organic Gardener Podcast Garden Journal and Data Keeper, available now at Amazon.com for $16.95. It's a place to keep track of your organic gardening journey, where you can record temperature, weather, recipes, produce that you grew, produce that you bought, and just all your successes and failures and challenges and dreams for the future, all your garden goals. Keep them track of them in one place. 225 pages that will go through each week of the year for the 2018 year. And just there's blank pages in there where you can sketch or write or do anything that will help you record your journey. So don't forget to get a copy of the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper, available at Amazon. You can go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 for the link.
If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.